Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here with my dear friend.
Yeah, Jared. Jared. You're Jared. Where's Jared?
I'm sorry, what, sir?
Jared, your dog. It's under my seat.
Okay.
Please have this dog under my seat removed.
He's piss mad.
This dog under my seat, please remove it. Hey, Jared.
He's piss
Jared,
mad.
Jared, you're lovely. You're lovely.
We have a Jared here, and he's actually came in.
You're lovely.
Looking for the dog, but there's nothing under your seat, sir.
Oh,
you're piss mad.
My bit worked.
I think you need
flawlessly.
A piss.
My bit worked flawlessly. I got Jared's ass in here. How about that?
I think you need a piss, sir.
I'm piss raving mad, Ross.
Just piss mad.
I'm piss mad.
Yeah.
I'm piss mad.
You need a piss.
I gotta take a piss, you know?
Maybe chill out with the Yeti in front of you. The large cup of water.
Yeah.
Because
sorry
we've got
about
a
that.
Long show ahead of us
sorry
talking
about
succession
that.
Here.
Okay, sorry.
What episode did we just watch? What
we
number?
We just
five?
Watched episode five, I believe.
Four or five, I'm confident. In four or five.
You're 100% on one of
those. That it's one of those two, four or five.
I'm pretty sure
60% four.
I'm pretty sure that was episode five that we
okay,
just watched.
Well.
Yeah. Retired Janitors of Idaho. See episode five. Yes, sir.
That was the title?
Yes.
Jesus. Yeah, it was that. I don't know. That was one of the weirder episodes of Succession we've had. It just because of the way it unfolded as like a nonstop anxiety roller coaster from hell.
Yeah. But you should feel great because I was like I was not getting on the Logan's losing his shit train,
the health train,
and you were the GD.
I was all over
you
this.
Were the GD conductor of it. You know what I mean?
I was all over this. The guy had given us these little fucking clues.
Now,
he was mental. It was because I've got to be aware here. I've watched this unfold in a favorite, you know, television character of
mine
on The Sopranos.
Ah, yes.
And it's not. So I looked for the signs weren't unfamiliar to me. It's also not something I'm unfamiliar with in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
As unfortunately, I've had to spend quite a bit of time around people with Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's watching Logan Roy operate this past two seasons, but really since you got to remember, they teed us up, this whole thing.
Season one, this
episode
man is
one,
in the hospital.
He's pissing on the floor
That's
of
right.
his fucking luxury penthouse when we meet him.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's this old man's deal? But then like every time there's a health issue, they find a way to explain it away.
Right.
And then his kids are all so confident that it doesn't matter and that he's just this big rhino that's going to run through everything and he'll never die. And like, this is the usual. It's been happening his whole life.
Yeah.
We never really feel like there's a reason to fear. But in the back of my head, I've been like, this old man is not all there. And now it turns out if he doesn't go tinkle.
He goes piss mad.
He goes piss mad. And it reminds me of this scene in Liar Liar, the classic comedy Liar Liar, where Jim Carrey, his character, what is his name? Fletcher?
Fletcher.
Fletcher says, Your Honor, would the court be willing to grant me a short bathroom break? And the judge says, is this necessary? And he can't lie,
remember, because
of the movie Liar Liar and the premise, spoiler alert, it was the 90s. Come on. Statute of limitations. He says, I've heard that if you hold it, it can cause like health issues and even difficulty becoming aroused.
Huh.
And the judge says, well, in that case, I better take a bathroom break too. And if only Logan had taken the time for a piss instead of just saying it over and over.
Right.
But clearly, the implication.
He's got a UTI.
I know, but the implication with that whole situation with this woman handling his UTI and his medications
and
she knows, oh yeah, that's what happens if he doesn't take his meds. That means this isn't the first time he's experienced this.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the kids not even be willing to like approach that line.
Right.
As they're barely even to write, like, what's his name? Idiot Roman.
Roman.
Is basically like trying to write the entire thing.
Romulus.
Like this is all just dad being dad. Classic dad.
He definitely, Roman cannot face this.
He just rolls the dice. This is classic dad.
Yeah.
He just gambles the company, but this is normal for him. And then everyone around them is just like, he's surrounded by idiots, Logan. These people are all morons.
Yeah, the kids are not.
Sycophants and yes men and morons.
Yeah. And I mean, it was interesting to watch this episode because none of the kids are really like seem all that great at making any moves at this point. Shiv does the best job in this particular episode.
Right.
You know, tries her hand at the wheeling and dealing, seems to be successful, and then gets absolutely poo-pooed on for it.
Yes.
And so it's like, you know, there you really just you cannot win this game of Thrones. So,
well, you either win or you die.
You either win or you die.
And
that's
it turns out,
say.
even if you win, you die.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a part that she forgot to mention in that line.
That's right.
But yeah, Logan. Okay, to your point about Shiv, she does successfully navigate this deal, right? Where she basically goes, okay, well, again, I wouldn't say this says much about her. The competition is weak.
Roman.
It's Roman.
It's Roman at the moment.
At that moment. So she goes, fuck it, I'll make a move. I see a window. I'm going to get a board seat for them.
Yeah.
But also tack one on for me and then slip this in there with the old man who's pissed mad.
And also, guess what? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that she's not going to get that board seat.
No, she's absolutely not going to get that board seat. The second she mentions it to Logan, he's like, I don't know what I would have done, but I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. And she got Waystar the board seat.
Right.
An additional board
not
seat.
Not her specifically, not, because that's not a thing that can be guaranteed.
Right. It's not written in there that it has to be Shiv Roy.
Now,
so
if she gets the other side to argue it for her, perhaps that could be something she has a foothold with. Yep. But even then, let's be realistic. Logan's going to pick who takes that seat.
Right, right.
And he has already made it quite clear he has no intention of picking any of his children for anything.
Yeah.
And so even after, as you put it, even after she successfully navigates this move, and she's the only one that's really successfully made a move, it still backfires because you cannot win even with piss mad Logan Roy. He sidelined the entire episode and no one made any progress. How the fuck?
Yeah. But they did not lose the company, you know?
Somehow, again. What was our initial conflict? Do you remember back in the day, like 2 seasons ago, there was something that was going to happen and they were like, fuck, we have to do this to avoid. There was a bear hug at one point. Somebody was being bear hugged.
That's still what's going on.
That's
bear
still
hug
happening.
Is still sort of what's going on.
Oh, that's Sandy and Stewie. They're the bear hug.
They're the bear huggers.
It just turns out one of the bears is near death.
Or
has been incapacitated in various forms.
That's correct. The dinosaurs are on their way out, it would seem, on both sides of the. You know,
yes, of the spectrum. I don't know what the fuck
battle.
Is going on with Stewie, but he's...
Sandy.
Sandy, rather. The young one, or the old one.
Yeah.
The oldest, the elder. He's not well.
No.
And here's the thing. I did have subtitles on when we watched this one, all we got was grumbling.
Yeah.
Low grumbling.
There's nothing to be
I'm not sure he actually
from...
said a fucking word.
That's correct.
I think this is
maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
Roman wasn't wrong when he said, how do I know we don't have a meat puppet situation here? That was one of the best lines of the episode, by the way. And I thought it was interesting that, like, I mean, it made me feel like, I was like, oh yeah, come on, he's obviously, and then Roman says it, and I'm like, well, I'm not that smart. If Roman noticed it. Because he's in my eyes.
No, he's
like,
definitely is this guy actually saying anything? Or
I guess he'd be the most suspicious in the room.
Is his daughter just doing the,
using
you know,
him.
Right, yeah. Yeah, using him as a prop. A meat puppet, if you will, as you said.
But then, Stewie says that Sandy is like the biggest pain in the ass of a vegetable and then makes like a broccoli joke or some other vegetable joke.
Zucchini, I believe.
There you go. Yeah. It was more class-filled than my version. And that leads me to believe that maybe he is in some way, or at least Stewie is being led to believe. But I don't know.
I think
what the hell is happening.
I honestly think it was all just kind of part of this kind of like vague joke about the whole situation.
That it's just fucked.
And Like
it's fucked. This was his business.
Stewie
partner.
Doesn't actually really know either, but he seems to. But Sandy's daughter, whose also name is Sandy, I believe, seems to be gathering information from him. So who the fuck knows?
Maybe they're banging or something. There might be some other angle there. These people are all degenerates.
That's right. That's right. So, it was a whirlwind of an episode. They do continue to seem to do these. I have this feeling that they did 9 or 10 episodes, and they were like, okay, well, 5 or 6 of them have to be essentially basically bottle episodes, even though they're not totally bottle episodes, but like one set, one place episodes.
Right.
Right? You know, now we've had our island episode, and now we've had our it's all at the shareholders meeting episode, and like
they've kind of done this historically.
Succession has always done this a little bit.
For the middle especially, right? We take these little trips to places and stuff.
We go up to Turnhaven to meet with the, you know, the liberal versions of the Roys.
Yeah, it's kind of one of the nice things about this show.
We go across the pond to Romania or wherever to do the boar on the floor thing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that's in their wheelhouse, but it's
we see these wealthy destinations sometimes.
Yeah, it's flagging in my mind. And I do like that. I have historically liked that about the show, that we just pop in. You know, we casually to like the big events that are happening on this timeline, not necessarily seeing like a whole bunch of the day to day. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right there. But it certainly was, you know, this was another opportunity to kind of put everybody together all in the same episode. Right. Kendall has reason to be there, even though he's fighting with the family.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's there. Greg's there. Tom's there. All the kids are there. Jerry's there. Frank's there. Carl's there. So it's like, you know, they definitely like to find these places where
they can mix and match.
Everybody would need to be there so that they can have all this crossfire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shareholders meeting was just in terms of unrealistic plot devices that we've dealt with, probably one of the more unfavorable to me. Like I just look, there was like 300 fucking people there.
Yeah.
And they stick Frank or whoever up there.
Frank and Carl.
He's talking for
for a minute.
80% of the episode. Then he punts to Jerry, who like immediately punts back or something. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, there's no fucking way all of these people would just sit here and like take this on the chin, because it was so clearly nonsense.
Uh-huh.
These people had nothing to present, nothing to say. They were all just delaying to see whether or not this vote was going to occur at all.
Right.
So it just made the whole situation awkward. I started thinking to myself, like, well, so who would these people be? That kind of thing. I'm like, well, I don't know any of them, and that kind of strikes me as odd. The only ones we actually do know aren't even in that room right now. We'd be waiting on them to show up for the vote. That'd be Sandy and Stewie. One of them is clearly not even going to show up for the vote because he's Sandy, and Sandy's daughter's going to be there instead, and then she is there, and then she meets with Shiv, and it's just like the whole fucking thing was just chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And then the old man the whole time is piss mad.
That's, yeah, yeah.
So these idiot kids who can't see that their own father would just admit to themselves that this dude is slipping, almost hand like the entire company over on a platter, because they were absolutely going to lose the vote. They have somebody there checking how it's going to go. And she's like, I highly urge you to find a way to settle and avoid this entire vote, or you are fucked. It's over. And that what she was saying is like, then there are no more moves. And I was so confused again by her. She's supposed to be smart, bro. It was so easy for Logan to suck her into this in his piss mad state.
Mm-hmm.
Where she's just like, fuck it. Like, you know what? Actually, yeah, dad. Yeah. And I was just like, God, your kid, this guy's kid. What does Marcia say earlier in the season? You're fucking kids. Or something like that. These goddamn kids.
They're just, man, his gravitational pull is
crazy.
Is just insane.
With his kids, man. It's crazy.
With his kids.
But with everybody else around him, too.
Yeah, exactly. With all of the kind of sycophants and people in the C-suite.
They're reliant on him.
Right. They're just,
I mean, when he's gone, this whole thing crumbles because he's surrounded by only morons and yes-men and sycophants. And that's kind of historically what they're pointing to that has happened throughout different power structures historically with human beings.
Absolutely. And when one person is essentially like the whole, is the whole
an emperor
thing. Yeah. When there is no real sharing of responsibility or power, because Logan's not willing to do that part of it either. Right. You know,
then
he doesn't actually delegate. Everybody that he puts into a position, whether it's Frank, Carl, Jerry, Shiv, whoever, they're just puppets as well.
They're just
pieces
for him.
They have
to do exactly what he says all of the time.
That's right.
And bend his every will.
So, you know, he's kind of created this environment to where, like, when he is gone, it's likely to crumble and be sucked up by somebody else that's not part of this world here, part of this little family.
Let's jump to the one other piece of it that's like crazy to me, and it's Greg and his grandfather,
Greg,
right?
Yeah.
So that obviously his grandfather has witnessed what we are speaking to with Logan, that he built this thing very selfishly in a way that is not sustainable and based almost entirely on his own personal needs and wants.
Right.
He has said that point blank to us repeatedly through three seasons now. So what unfolds with him in this episode, Greg awkwardly has been playing both sides. He was with Kendall at one point. Then he basically had to betray Kendall, which he tells Kendall in this episode, to which Kendall responds, tight, tight. I might have to burn you, though.
Yeah.
So we've got that going. Kendall might burn Greg.
Yeah, we did. We failed to mention the one of the best scenes of last week. I know we were covering two episodes, but the rum drink at like what was appeared to be 10 a.m.
Strong for a man.
Strong for a man. Yeah. Should I chug this? I can chug it.
I love, dude. He's so good. And but anyway, his whole situation. What happens there? His grandfather invites him to lunch with his lawyer that he fired. Right.
That's right. And he's pissed off. And this is and we were kind of skeptical as to what we don't know what is happening with Greg. Greg is literally trying to play both sides. He wants his cake. He wants to eat it too. At the same time, I feel like I was correct last week in saying that Greg wants to play this game as well. He wants to be one of these dumbass yes-men, sycophants, just in the orbit of Logan Roy. He's been drawn in. Yeah,
he's seen the power. Right?
So he, you know, when he outlines his his plan to be head of a theme park in Buffalo to Tom, like, and then goes and signs the contract with Logan to come under the joint defense, right? To come under the umbrella.
Joint defense.
That seemed to be legit. He was making a play there to climb the ladder.
You were not wrong. He is adult. I don't think Greg's as stupid as he's leading us to believe, because that was such a dumbass, inexplicably stupid move to me. But you were right, for sure, 100%.
Now Kendall is like, oh, okay, that's totally cool, I get it, but I'll probably have to burn you now.
Yeah. And so, Greg, again, stupid as fuck, because he should have seen that coming a million miles away.
Of course. And Kendall casually drops it in there, unless you want to come back and get back on our side, essentially.
Right.
You know, just cross the line again and I won't burn you. Meanwhile, he's fired the third party lawyer, which is what his granddad is there pissed off about.
That he's known for 50 years.
Yeah.
It's a friend of his.
Yeah.
Barrett. Not just some lawyer.
And essentially is like, by the way, I'm donating my entire all of my wealth
to Greenpeace.
To Greenpeace,
is honestly, first of all, not uncommon. I think wealth accumulation often leads to a lot of discombobulation in families, that then leads to the wealthiest person going, you know what, fuck all these people, and donating it. That's not uncommon. You hear about it. And in the case of Greg, what I didn't realize is that Greg was sort of the only grandchild, I guess, left that sort of maybe had a chance to maybe do something.
I think that's right. Yeah.
And it turns out, like, now that Grandpa has seen Greg is clearly lost, he's going to just give this shit to Greenpeace.
Yeah, and I kind of had to piece this together, but we know that Greg had turned down a gigantic sum of money to leave Waystar, right?
$100 million.
To essentially get out of this game.
Yes.
Here's your $100 million. Just go do literally anything.
Whatever
else.
The fuck, yeah.
Yeah. He says no to that.
Yes.
But it still expected down the line some piece of
version of inheritance.
An inheritance or trust or whatever it might be.
Right.
He's now learning he's not going to get this. I actually thought this was interesting because, and I'm happy with this, I'm fine with it, because it was really the only piece of what I would consider true character development in this episode, was that I found Greg for the first time kind of unlikable.
Yeah.
Kind of a heel.
I
playing both sides.
Completely turned off by the walking away from the $100 million thing.
Betraying Kendall, and then firing the lawyer that his granddad hired for him, who was a neutral third party, so that he, you know, could stay out of this war essentially.
Yeah,
like the whole thing and all of it to just be playing
head
the game
a,
to
head
be,
of a theme park
to be the head of a theme park, and so. You know, and then he's miffed at this, right? And he gets a little defensive about asking for a little, you know.
He's really entitled.
He's very entitled.
He's going to sue
extremely entitled here.
Greenpeace.
Yeah. That's right.
Tom is impressed.
That's right.
Yeah. That is not good.
Yeah.
Tom is like, I like your style, Greg.
That is a move that one of these
people would make.
Dinguses over here.
Insufferable
would make.
Humans would make.
Yeah. That's right.
Greg, I think we all like Cousin Greg. He's very funny.
Yeah.
And he's fun, and he's like 7 feet tall.
Yep.
And I clearly, deep down inside me, was rooting for this, right. And I've found myself doing this on like on shows I love, like The Sopranos.
Wait, what were you rooting for?
Where I know that a character is sliding. And I make up a narrative, mm-hmm. like he's wearing a wire and he knows what he's doing and he's clearly making all these moves, but he wants us to think we're stupid.
Yeah.
And then I try to sell that to all the podcast listeners and because I want him to still be good.
Right, right.
And now we've seen is like, I think, irrefutable evidence that this was not some like mastermind Greg hatched scheme. Now, the only thing I will throw out there to still give some credence to my potential people wearing wires and treachery afoot mm-hmm. situation mm-hmm. is a Twitter follower of ours pointed out.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up. I'm glad that, you're mentioning.
Yeah, that in the original Succession season 3 poster, there is a pretty clear line, a literal line yep. down the middle of the cast.
Yep.
And there are people on the left side with Kendall and people on the right side with Logan. And the only people on the left side with Kendall are Greg and Tom.
That's right.
And that just, as we've seen them now positioned even further through this episode, still makes sense to me just from a even fucking with us standpoint. And I don't put it past these writers to throw a weird curveball like that at us either.
No, absolutely. And I think that, I think that Greg is, he's Greg the egg. He's also Greg the enigma. He's one of these guys that like kind of stumbles into the right decision.
Right.
And something kind of, and when it comes down to it, he's got some crafty, real clever moves
he's
to play.
Been able to make a lot of moves.
But along the way, he's kind of a dumbass. And that,
right.
they keep letting us know that that's also part of him. Asking his friend to text her law professor. She's a first year in first semester, and he's trying to get law advice from this girl. And
well, and to take it back to where we met Greg, like, puking out of the costume mask,
asking for the rum and coke at 10 a.m., which is clearly an offer you're meant to turn down. Like all that, you know, he's
an idiot.
He's an idiot, but he does,
he's also got something.
But he's got something. He is able to make smart decisions here and there. So absolutely.
Greg, the enigma.
There is still treachery afoot. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody is going to come back over to Kendall's side because he's siloed right now. He's on his own.
Let's talk about him just for a second before we abandon Succession then. Yeah. Because what the fuck? What happened? He went from full-blown attack to, okay, well, I completely botched this. No one is in my corner anymore. I have absolutely zero shot at becoming CEO, so I'm going to play some weird game in the middle. What did he keep calling himself? He was like, mastermind out.
Oh, yeah. Like puppet master, right?
Puppet master out. Like, he was the one that was like making all of it okay to save the company. And then he runs up into the meeting and he's like, you will not fuck this up for me. And
and he has a bunch of code names for himself because he's also an insufferable idiot. When he first gets off the phone with Frank, right before the intro plays, I'm pretty sure he says, Eagles Airy out or Eagle Airy out.
Jesus.
A-E-R-I-E. I had to put subtitles on to see what it was that he said there. But yeah, man, he's
derailed.
Speaking of the Clam fam, we had some people in the Discord basically saying like an alternate name for this show would just be like Kendall almost does something good, but then does something bad. Like he just can't get out of his own way.
Oh, he has this whole team he hired and like, I just, watching him spin this, he was the other piece of the episode that I was like, God damn it, I hated that. Watching him just spin the wheel as the puppet, as trying to play both sides and mm-hmm. see if he could get these deals to get done. And then the end, it's Shiv who does it. It's not even him. He's completely uninvolved. He is completely lost. I have no clue how this in any way goes his direction unless he can flip people for the feds to somehow help him remove his dad or some crazy shit like that. Because what possible move does he make? And the other reason I think old man Logan has to lose his marbles completely, mm-hmm. he's aware of a very specific dead body that his son has ties to.
Right.
And that is a problem for Kendall's development as a character moving forward past the Logan era, if there even intends to be one, which we still are yet to see. So,
yeah. Obviously I don't know what's going to happen in the back half of the season here, but
we still have half,
but I do, or four episodes. I don't know if it's 9 or 10. I'm still unconfirmed on that.
Well, a lot,
but yes, still have
feel good
to
about
go
that.
Essentially.
Okay. God, a lot's happened.
And yeah, man, something, the other shoe has to drop on one of these sides. So somebody either,
the pressure keeps building, it just keeps building and building.
Somebody either has to, whether it's Kendall burning Greg, Logan burning Kendall, Kendall burning Logan. Because
all
the
we've
papers,
seen are these little stop gaps, like people plugging their thumb in a hole at the fucking a dam.
And, right, and we're the last few episodes, right, have all been about this middle part where it's we got to keep the company with us,
right,
so that we can like finish this other fight that's going on here.
After we save it, and then we fight.
Yeah. So that so we're definitely going to get more movement going forward. I did want to ask you just one kind of general question.
Yeah.
When you're watching Succession, theme music drops and we cut to the, you know, to the title sequence. In your mind, are we watching old videos of the actual Roy kids?
Very happy you brought this up. It is something that I have argued in my head and never brought up to another living human being every single time I have watched the show. Every single time I watch the opening credits, Barrett, yep. I go, but, okay, so is that supposed to be like Logan and the kids? And I'm telling you, I've paid very close attention all season and argued this in my head alone. I'm happy to share it with you. I have concluded for my purposes that, yes, we are meant to be watching home footage of the actual Roy family.
Okay, I disagree.
Damn it. Why do you disagree?
There are a few reasons, but I feel like... One, if that had been the intention, I just get the sense that they would have made it a little bit more specific.
I think they botched it.
Everything is so vague. And also...
Yes, it is very vague. You never easily, get any real facial looks of Logan.
You get no facial... You get no faces, essentially. You get a kid here and there.
The kid's faces you get at the table, but never anything even remotely close to Logan.
That's right. And also, tell me what decade that you think that footage is from. Because it could be
60s,
right? It could be anywhere from the 60s to the 80s.
It looks like stuff that my parents grew up with, though. Like when I see photos of their family, that's the graininess level. Like when I see them as kids with their parents, my grandparents.
Right. That I agree. Like I think that you think about the ages of these kids, they're a little bit older than us. Maybe Roman, who's the youngest, is like maybe right in our. Right in that 35-ish range,
yeah.
But I think probably a little bit older than that. I think.
Kendall's supposed to be 40
Kendall's
plus.
Kendall's 40s, early 40s, just past 40, right in there. Shiv's getting close to 40.
40 plus, maybe early
and
40s.
I think probably late 30s for Shiv, and then Roman somewhere right
behind. Yeah, they're always younger than...
Right behind that.
Yeah.
So this footage of them being like, you know, nominally 10 years old, maybe it's 12, maybe it's 8, but like we're talking like in that's 80s.
Right.
That's mid-80s probably. And I think that the footage just looks like it could be a little older. It's got that 70s, maybe even 60s tone to it. All that to say, I also just think it's like
the filter over it. Yeah.
When I watch it, I don't, because there's nothing that is Roy specific. I'm just like, this is just meant to be like kind of like a representation of kind of generational family wealth playing out,
and that's what I used
in
to
childhood.
Think. But I have
this is what it looks like in general.
I have a thing that everyone listening is yelling at their radio at this point.
Okay,
and it's that it ends every single time with a direct Roy fade. It goes from the kids at the table with the dad and everybody from this thing we've been watching the entire time to actual Logan Roy with the kids at his like business table.
Okay,
and that's my. Like, gotcha. After all this arguing back and forth, because it here's what I'll say. At the end of the day, I think that it is supposed to be the Roys.
Okay.
And it is supposed to be a direct fade to the present day to show us that.
Got it.
But they fucking botched this because it's always been weird.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe that's what it was supposed to do. But it's like, it's literally taken 3 full seasons for me to stand confidently on a take about it at all.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm just like... Every time I watch it, I go back and forth. I'm like, well, no, because see, that's clearly not any of these kids.
It's funny because like, while I kind of tend to agree, right? Like if they meant for that to be the Roy family, then like I don't think that they should have made it look so old. And maybe they give us some type of clue that like, oh, yeah, that would be Logan. That would be Logan. That makes sense. But it's so disconnected from what we see on screen. And at the same time, I love this title sequence. I think it's great.
It's one of the all-time GOATs.
So
I don't know.
It's very,
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's.
I hate it and I love it. Barrett.
Well, I'm honestly, I'm glad that we disagreed because it makes for a more interesting conversation to hear.
Well, but it's
hear
also
hear the sides.
I have literally been on both sides of this, but like repeatedly switched, and it's just where I am right now is that I believe it to be actually the children. as of my watch last night. So, yeah. But, dude, I'll say this for Succession. And any concerns I had about being able to successfully entertain me underneath the Logan umbrella, they're washed away. It is gone. I none left 4 or 5 episodes into the season, wherever we are. I'm completely confident in the writer's ability to keep this show entertaining as shit because they have done what I wanted with his health. They have not continued to string it out. They've made it this very apparent issue that these kids, now everybody's aware of. Now everybody knows.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yep.
Turns out, if this dude doesn't take some medication at some point and needs to pee-pee, he's going to go fucking insane and potentially ruin all of our lives.
Yeah, and just like they're sitting there thinking about the, you know, just the recent memory, right, of this whole day.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, so when did he start going piss Matt? Well, now going...
And then Connor says he offered me this thing, and she's like, well, for certain it was before that. And he's like, no, he was totally coherent.
Well, now he doesn't need it because, you know, the president is quitting and he's not going to run for re-election, the raisin.
Who is supposed to be Biden, right?
No.
I feel like now more and more they've made it lean that this is Biden. Like, because they said they brought up the aptitude tests.
Yeah.
They painted them as old and senile.
Another one where I am, that is absolutely just supposed to be vague. We talked about it at the beginning.
Okay,
about how the raisin.
I think they can play it both ways.
They can, but the raisin, what does it connotate is wrinkles, right? That's what the raisin is. So I think the main joke with the nickname is essentially that, like, all these dudes are old as shit.
Old and dried up. Yeah.
The fact that they have such a close relationship with him and they are kind of the, you know, the representation of like our right wing news media.
That's true. That would indicate
that he's a Republican.
Right.
But
then there've been elements we've heard
too. I just think they're just pulling it all in.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's that they can play with all of it.
They can.
So they're throwing us little nods here and there both ways.
So they can do Biden stuff about how he's like probably old and senile, and they can do Trump stuff about how, you know, they're just having fun with it, but it's not. And that works because it's not quote unquote supposed to be one or the other of those guys. It's just the office.
Well, I mean, Logan is also a representation of one political side of the executive spectrum and the way that is handled, that Trump was like very much the figurehead of.
Yeah.
So it's they definitely do get in with the raisin specifically, though, have now thrown things where it's like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
This is just them being able to play with all the politics of it.
Exactly.
Regardless of what happens down the line, too.
But yeah, well, to finish that thought, it's like, now, anytime they're like not sure that this dude is like making the right decision or like, why would he choose to do that? Like, or says fuck him to the government. I'm like, well, is this dude just piss mad again? Is he losing his marbles? Like, is he...
Do we have to run him to the restroom
before something else happening?
Sign this? Right.
Yeah, exactly. There's the seed of doubt is now planted, so...
Because this wasn't the first health issue.
Right.
We've seen other stuff. He's got this boot on now. The hell is that? They didn't tell us what the fuck happened out of that ranch where... What's his name? From
Adrian
the pianist
Brody.
Is out there?
A disappointing lack of Josh, my guy, layered up.
What's your favorite Adrian Brody movie?
Dude, I don't have one. I'm not an Adrian Brody head.
Pianist.
I've never seen it.
You should see it.
Yeah.
But the only two I can even name are The Pianist and King Kong.
Okay.
King Kong with Jack Black. It was like 6.5 hours long. There's no way you watched it because it was 6.5 hours long.
I definitely did not watch it.
Fucking, it was okay.
No. I did see that one.
I think we probably watched it in high school together.
Yeah, we probably did. We probably went to the movies
in
the
movie theater.
Yeah.
With some babes.
Naomi Watts.
We were surrounded by babes in high school, Barrett and I.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing but babes.
Just raining babes.
I did see that one. He's okay. I'd have to look at the Adrian
Naomi
Brody
Watts.
List, man.
Yes. Anyway, Adrian Brody. You let Barrett and I down, man.
Oh, isn't he in the Brothers Bloom? Is that one?
That sounds correct.
Him and Mark Ruffalo or something?
Oh, isn't he also in that train movie with like Owen Wilson and like there's three brothers?
Darjeeling Limited, Wes Anderson, yeah.
At least one of them tries to commit suicide because it's a Wes Anderson movie.
I got to go see French Dispatch. I need to see that.
There's got to be a suicide attempt in there.
Which is a good segue because I was, well, we probably have a read, but I was just recently in a movie theater to see what we're going to talk about.
Oh, yes, we should probably talk about Dune. But first, brace yourself. Winter is coming. What the writers of Game of Thrones didn't want to tell you is that Bran was actually in a wheelchair because he didn't trim his balls with Manscaped. That's what it says here, Barrett. Poor guy thought it was okay to trim his balls with a traditional razor or hair trimmer, and he was permanently injured. Not sure what you want to give as a gift for the holidays? Well, Manscaped is the ultimate gift, and they're here to change the men's grooming game, and you can get 20% off plus free shipping when you use the code OCC20 at manscaped.com. OCC20. And in all seriousness, men's grooming is no joke. And it is a real thing we have to do. I have the Manscaped nose and ear trimmer. It's called the Weed Whacker. There's one behind Barrett. Barrett, I mentioned this in the privacy of one of my other shows that I have never trimmed my nose hair until I got this. So I went 34 years. And it turns out it makes a pretty significant difference. Like, I had a good crop going up there. And the ears, not so much. But I definitely am a nose hair guy. Didn't know this. It's an example of some manscaping that I wasn't aware of that Manscaped can help you with. They've also got their lawnmower 4.0.
I'm not up in my nose too often, but like, you know, dinner date on the weekend or maybe to a party or something like that. That's definitely an area that you gotta do the thing. You look up, you check it out, you put the weed whacker up there, you're done.
And I had all stuff, it was hanging out, Barrett. There was a jungle in there. It wasn't pleasant. But yeah, so if you've got that with your downstairs mix-up, they've got the lawnmower 4.0. If it's not pleasant down there and you can fix up all your ball and dick areas and such, it's a blast doing manscaping with your Manscaped products from manscaped.com when you use the code OCC20.
More like the lawnmower 6.9, am I right?
Wow, I'm sure we'll get there one day. The technology just keeps improving. This one has a fucking flashlight on it. I'm not joking. It has a fucking flashlight on it.
Dual function.
Yeah.
You know, you can, in a pinch, the power goes out.
It's a flashlight.
You grab your Manscaper.
It's a flashlight. Yeah. Seriously, though, manscaped.com, code OCC20, 20% off plus free shipping. During the winter, you may be spending more time inside with your balls. Might as well make them beautiful. All right, support our sponsors, though. That's not a joke. Let's talk about Dune. You saw it in theaters.
I went to see this in theaters.
Was it an IMAX theater?
No. Okay, here's the thing. I got boned on this.
Oh, no. This has happened to me before.
First of all, the IMAX, the Dune showings for IMAX at Bob Bullock are big, fancy, gigantic, like, 3,000-foot IMAX screen here in Austin.
Yeah, the only one we have.
They were sold out like crazy. It's the only
pain in the ass.
It's the only I don't know what they call it. It's the only like mega screen that we have
in Central Austin.
There are also IMAX screens at another theater here, but by the time I got around to seeing Dune, Eternals had come out and it had stolen all of the IMAX screens.
Oh.
And by all accounts, Eternals is not nearly as good of a movie as Dune is. So
I've heard nothing about it. So
this was disappointing. But I did. So I just, you know, I settled for, and I say settled for, it's a great experience always. So it wasn't really, you know, I didn't have to twist my arm about it. But I went to the Draft House to see this.
Ah, yeah, it's the best thing if it's not an IMAX.
Yeah.
You know?
So I gotta say, this was a very, very, very good, awesome, fun experience seeing this movie. I'll say this. I don't remember walking into a theater with such anticipation and then walking out with such glee since I want to say The Dark Knight.
Okay, so
like just like floored by the story and the world building and the scenery and the performances and what could come next and just like everything about it was like was pretty next level.
The execution was nuts.
The execution was nuts, dude. Shouts to my guy, Denis Villeneuve, who is just, I mean...
Oh, he's awesome. But they cut all the fat.
Watch your back, Christopher Nolan.
There is very, very little fat.
That's
like,
correct.
I've watched this fucker 3 times now because I got a stomach bug that took 3 days to fully recover from. It was awful. There were worms coming out of me, Barrett. and I was just like, fuck it, I'm putting on... It's like one of those things when you're sick, you don't want to have to... ingest new information. I was just like, give me something I already know is going to make me a little happy. And I went back to Dune again, and it's just, there is no fat. Like, every scene is cool as shit for one reason or another. And that's the kind of thing that you can only achieve ever so often. And it's like where your director and your actors and your writers all have to be sort of on the exact same page, I think. I think that's what leads to it. But, oh my God, like, because that's the thing. The buildup was so huge for this that I was like, there is no fucking way this is going to be good. Because too often, these huge, built-up, epic movies, as of late, have been sort of, well, huge box office flops a lot of the time, but then just sort of a letdown when you end up getting around to them. It's just like, oh, man, that was kind of fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like, people haven't really responsibly spent their budgets or something.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Dune
totally.
Kept getting pushed back and there was a pandemic and all this shit. And I was just like, dude, no way. So I watched it at home, not even in the theater. And after the first watch, granted, I have a sick TV, but humble brag. But I was like, when it ended, I was like, okay. Holy shit. Okay. Because it far outlived any expectation I had.
Yeah.
Like I knew that they had something cool to play with. I had seen the trailer. I was stoked on the worm. But in terms of the world building and the story,
this movie slaughtered the trailer, Ross. Like I thought the trailer was good and kind of thrilling, but it also had moments of worry for me, like where I was like, I don't know if that's going to work.
I like that though. Now in hindsight,
that's what I'm. No, that's perfect. That's yeah. or not perfect. It's just that so rarely happens where because obviously they're spending a giant sum of money on the trailer to make sure the trailer is
and they're not
badass
confident
as hell.
Enough, so they try to put all the best shit in the trailer, and it fucks the movie up sometimes.
And then to get to the movie and have it, you know, just be like so much better than what I could have expected from the trailer is quite stunning. I liked what you were saying about, you know, how with the execution, about how everything has to be on the same page. It's such a dance. And you mentioned the budget as well. Like,
yeah. Oh, dude. And with the special effects side too. Yeah.
Right. And you have to, it's such a balancing act, because like you got to put money into every part of it. Right.
Right.
You need fucking Oscar Isaac and Jason Momoa. And if you've not seen Dune, please go ahead. You're done. You can.
Yeah. Done. Go watch it now.
Yeah,
it's time for you to go watch the movie.
Well, you got Oscar Isaac and Jason Momoa in a 2.5 hour movie, and like combined, they have what, 35 minutes of screen time, and they're both dead by the end of it.
They're side characters.
Like they're side characters. That is flooring, dude. That they are not only that you've got the budget to fund that, but that they obviously believe in the vision so much that they're willing to
play the roles
play the role. And I mean, you know, maybe I'm giving them too much credit.
I don't think so.
Of course, you want to be in Dune, but like to have.
But see, that's the thing where I don't even know anymore. I feel like this was one that was red flag city for like a potential disaster, like cat style meme joke.
Yeah.
In the end, because it was like all about this fucking worm marketing wise. You know what I mean? I was just like, that's why I kind of tread lightly going in. I was like, I'm not going to build this up too much because I'm scared.
But they
crushed it.
But in the way that those roles were lean, but still like had such impact, both of them.
Watching Momoa
was
fight.
Was awesome.
Watching Momoa fight, okay, and that's all I'll say, in that scene.
Yeah, yeah.
That you know what I'm talking about, is it hit me in that moment what you just said. Damn, dude, I didn't even see this man on screen all that much. Like, and I am very invested emotionally in what is occurring right now.
Right, yes.
That is saying a lot about this movie and what they have achieved here, because I seen C, and it is fucking trash. And that dude is the same dude.
Yeah.
I've also seen him as Khal Drogo and thought him as an uncle in my fantasy world. So it's like that. You have to all be on this. You have to have all of it, Barrett.
Yeah. And then and so you're, you know, it's like, you know, you are given a budget and then you dole it out. And I didn't feel like they, you know, they didn't skimp on the acting to go so heavy on the CGI, but the CGI was awesome, but it looked good and it looked natural. And I never was like distracted by something that was like, that looks too CGI-ish. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
you went like, too full Star Wars or whatever. Like, it didn't like the, get too like crazy
the,
like
the
that.
The whole thing just worked. And like I said, like, just such a credit to the director who's at the helm of all this, who is the CEO of the movie. This Denis Villeneuve guy is not missing right now. And, you know, Arrival is such a badass film.
It is incredible, yes.
Is probably severely underrated.
Get some Ren coins out of that one.
What's up?
Ren coins.
Yeah.
Didn't Jeremy Renner in Arrival?
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Famous Ren coin debacle.
And you know, just to talk about the story, right? Like, they don't do a whole lot of exposition. They let you sit in it and figure it out. They don't really give you a whole lot about this whole Ben Jezret thing going on the side. And they don't really, like...
They don't try to bite off too much.
They don't... Yeah, and this...
Very important element right there.
Yeah, and
that could have destroyed the whole ship, bro.
So it's like... They just, you know... They just nailed it, man. They nailed all these points. They didn't try to go too heavy on the exposition or give you too much of the story. They just, you know, they let everybody cook. They let Denny cook. It all looked amazing, and they told a really, really interesting story, even though it's one that we've seen a million times. There's a, you know, a boy prince, right? The prince that was promised, or Luke Skywalker, or whoever. Like,
yeah,
you know, this is a, this is the,
he's Jon Snow, Luke Skywalker.
Yep, he's all of them.
There's 50 of them.
There's, yeah.
It's late in the day for Barrett and I. It was so, a break.
And yet it felt novel. It felt new. It felt interesting. And
that's the other. That's so hard to do.
Yeah.
For me to be watching it, like, yeah, this is pretty simple setup wise, and then also acknowledging how incredibly well executed, entertaining, and fun it is
so
an accomplishment.
I believe that I've heard Dune referred to as, and I cannot remember if I'm getting this right, but I think I've heard it referred to as an Om text. It's a something text. I think it's Om, but I might be botching that. And it's like, essentially, Dune came out in the 1960s, I believe, and is kind of a foundational piece of all the sci-fi that would come after it. And so I've not read the book, but in watching this story told on screen, you could just very clearly see how this particular story and the description around it influenced things like Star Wars. It's got that
right.
It's that, you know,
foundational feel to a lot of it,
right? And you know how Star Wars is almost like, you know, how everything looks dirty. And
yeah.
Obviously, Sandy. we're far enough advanced to be traveling at light speed and like bouncing around galaxies and solar systems and planets, but like
but everything. The ships are-
But everything is grungy and the technology isn't that
Harrison
good.
Harrison Ford's ship is a damn mess.
That came straight out of Dune, which is like is very famous for being
old
like
school
a
tech, that throwback tech.
Yeah,
kinda.
it's a modern futuristic world where like technology has kind of ceased to advance a little bit.
Yeah, it's weird.
In a way.
I don't even know how to put it.
Almost gone retro.
I pulled up the book info when you want it.
And so this also reminded me, I could feel how George Martin was influenced by Dune for Game of Thrones and like in the family fighting and
some of the character structure, yeah.
And some of the character structure as well. So it's just like it's just very cool to watch something that you kind of know influenced a bunch of the other shit that you like.
And now you see why it's so revered.
And that, exactly. And yeah. Then and now it's this weird loop, right? Where it's kind of the origin for all of that, but it's also coming after it visually.
Because so the first version was a total mess, apparently.
So it reminds you of.
I read more about it.
Reminds you of some of this shit, but it's also kind of it paved the way for it in a way as well. So it's
right. It's both.
Yeah,
double edged. But Dune is a 1965 science fiction novel by American author Frank Herbert, originally published as two separate serials in Analog Magazine. It tied for an award. I'm not going to get into it any further. That was from Wikipedia. But yeah, so it reading more about the original David Lynch Dune,
mm-hmm.
It sounds like he tried to put too much of weird stuff into it, and it just got too confusing and weird and creepy, and it was just bizarre. It's why it's kind of this cult classic, because there's like really unnerving shit in it, and it's like the Baron is like hideously disformed and like getting shots in his face and like is a pedophile, like all this crazy shit. It's a fucking mess. So like I'd said last episode, I had never seen that version.
Yeah.
And I was always kind of wary of Dune's image being a failure on the big screen as a part of the tie to it, but it also being this cult classic and these books or series of books or whatever the fuck. And now that I've seen it in its all of its glory, I'm like, oh, thank you, God. But it just is a matter of, it's one of those things, anybody could have ended up with this. It's just happened to be the right director, the right producer, the right whoever that got Villeneuve on this thing, so it's not some dickhead who destroys it. And then because the casting job, not enough can be said. They spent a lot of money here.
Yeah.
And Zendaya is barely used.
Barely in this movie. Yeah.
Shocking element to me that you barely see her in this one. I was just like, she's like the biggest movie star on the planet right now. But going through the list, Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
One of my all-time favorite actors. One of my all-time favorite actors, period. Also, Josh Brolin.
He's just out here spitting.
Josh Brolin, one of my all-time favorite actors.
That's right.
Period. Oscar Isaac quickly ascending the ranks.
Very quickly.
He is not missing at all. Timothée Chalamet. I don't think anybody else needs to say any good thing. He's got enough. He's got enough compliments coming his way currently. And no more can be said about that dude. But it's a ridiculous cast. And their characters were all sick. What I'm looking for is how they carry that into part two.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
for
how
sure.
many parts are we talking? Because I feel like they could do six.
They could probably do six. Now, here's the thing. I want to talk about this a little bit as well.
Yeah,
there is a you know, everything has to go like this these days because of the streaming newfangled televisual world that we live in.
Technology.
But there is a HBO Max series coming for Dune that is apparently focused on the Bene Gesserit to help tell that story and fill in the mythology there.
Of course there is, Barrett.
But did you watch this movie and at how many times were you thinking, fuck, this would have also been a dope-ass television series?
A lot, because it was the exact same as the way I enjoyed it was like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, 1,000,000%.
Damn, they're talking about what now? The Bene Gesserit? Ooh, I can't wait to Google that later. And like, that's the kind of shit that they nailed it perfectly because it's detail that would be in the books.
Right.
That you do not put that into the television show or the movie. You make the super fans go and get that out of the books or whatever. But like, if you try to overcomplicate the story on screen, you will destroy it. So make me go learn about that shit or put it's going to be a little bit more in the second movie, right? Or whatever. And I'm sure it'll become a huge. Clearly, the setup here is now Timothée Chalamet. What's his character's name?
Paul.
His name is Paul.
Paul.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Dune Paul is going to go with these the people from this island that are
from
planet
from the desert. Yeah.
From this island boy planet, in the desert, Arrakis or whatever the fuck that just kills the shit out of everyone. I don't
is
know why
Arrakis?
Anybody would Arrakis. Why anybody would be here? It isn't the Baron is beyond me.
To harvest the spice.
Yeah, but
spice is life.
It kills everything. Also, the Baron.
I'm high on spice.
What's his name? The actor that plays the Baron.
It's something Skarsgård. Stellan.
Stellan Skarsgård. Quickly.
Also perfectly well cast.
Top five now, I think, right? Living? Current male actors?
In terms of age
and veteran, like, who are you casting over this guy if they're like, we need a role for what Jack Nicholson would have been 20 years ago?
Well, no. Stellan Skarsgård is the perfect casting here because he can be so creepy.
He's just awesome. Dude, I'm thinking back to Chernobyl.
He's a fantastic villain. I will give you, like,
but Chernobyl, he was a good guy. He was the lovable guy.
That's right. You're right.
I'm telling you, he's goated. I just ride hard for Stellan, bro, and all the Skarsgårds, frankly.
Are you capping?
No. I'm not capping at all. There's no cap.
No cap? He's goated?
He's goated, bro. I love Stellan Skarsgård.
I mean, I guess
him as the Baron.
I guess that's facts.
Apparently, yeah. Thank you, Barrett. That's enough. Apparently, he spent like an outrageous amount of time. Like, you know how they're always like, and Matthew McConaughey spent 6 minutes and
yeah.
I guess he doesn't. He's a bad example. Why'd I pick McConaughey?
Somebody that does
a ton of makeup stuff.
Okay, right.
Spent 80 hours becoming the Joker. And you're like, holy shit, that's a lot of hours to sit there. And then they show you the fast screen version of how they did
it. Time lapse. Yeah.
Apparently Stellan like broke some kind of record for like the amount of time this shit took.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so awesome, sweet, dude.
It was badass.
Oh, it was sick.
When the one dude is so lit, Barrett. It was so lit. no cap. When the guy is just like talking to him and he's talking to the black ooze liquid, and then he just kind of like lifts up out of it.
Is he gone?
I want them off my dune.
My dune.
Yeah.
His voice is sick. The way he carries himself. So I read into some of this. Apparently, because you know, at one point he rises up real high.
Yeah.
So
I googled
how does the Baron float?
Why he do that?
He has straps because he weighs too much. He's too obese.
His
bone structure can no longer support his weight because he's such this monstrous fucking nightmare person that just eats at everything he finds and kills everything. So he's just this blob dude that gets carried by straps. That's how he does that. So it's weird
because
now I watch the scene again and I'm like looking for straps and there aren't any.
Well, it was well done.
Terrifying. Yeah, terrifying.
Very terrifying.
How does he become in boss, though? Because here's the thing. There's no fight to be had there, right? There's not going to be like a physical altercation between him and Timothée Chalamet.
Mm.
I guess he's got that badass fucking like top dog guy, his kid or something. Is that a kid?
Oh, no.
His son?
Dave Bautista?
Yeah. It is Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
That guy's getting fucking money.
He is.
By the way.
Is.
Wrestlers are getting paid.
My dude is getting paid. I saw, quick aside, Just Roman Reigns. Do you know who this is?
No.
He's a WWE superstar.
Yes, I do. Sorry. Yes, I do.
I saw, like, I wasn't really paying attention, but he was on Fallon last night, or the episode of Fallon that was playing last night.
Okay.
This dude, like, carries himself and even sounds like The Rock. And, like, you can just tell that he is...
building it up, that model.
They've put him on this John Cena, Dave Bautista, The Rock trajectory, where he is going to be a action movie star in, like, 3 years.
The Rock is the Hove of the wrestling game.
Yeah. Because, and I mean, you're not joking, dude. John Cena's got his HBO Max series coming because from Suicide Squad. Yep. Dave Bautista's in Guardians of the Galaxy and all the Marvel shit now.
That was, like, his big launch
now
point.
Dune.
Yeah.
And was very good in this role.
He's, like, great, man. That's the thing. You see him and you're like, oh, this fucking guy? And then he starts acting and you're like, okay, I like this fucking guy.
Yeah, I don't want to fall into the trap of seeing movies that I enjoy, especially, like, ones that are, like, obviously big franchise IP tent poles, and being like, it would have been dope as a TV show.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, because we've trained ourselves, we've gotten used to this, like, long form storytelling where we're able to chew off more. I wanted to talk about it because we talk about what the next Game of Thrones is all the time. It's an industry, like, that's what everybody in the industry is going for. It's Wrinkle of Time on Amazon. It's the Lord of the Rings one on Amazon.
I want to hear Wrinkle of Time takes from people on Twitter.
It's everybody's throwing their hat in the ring. Everybody's spending $500 million or whatever to, like, try to recreate that.
Right.
And this was the first time where I was like, this is awesome.
This could have been.
I want to live in this world, and, like, it just gave and I. You know, the family fighting between Baron's people and Oscar Isaac, Timothée Chalamet's people.
Yeah.
Like, that could have been a much longer story, I'm sure. But they did lean it out, and it did create this just awesome 2.5 to 45 experience. You know me, I'm always complaining about time. This movie didn't feel long to me, man. I was happy to sit there and enjoy the whole thing.
It was the thing I noticed going in. I was like, ooh, are we going to bump up against it? Is this going to be a little long?
At no point was I like, they could have made this shorter.
I've watched it repeatedly since because it was that good, dude. It was shockingly impressive considering the setup. Like, I was like, dude, I'm looking at the cast and I'm just like, there's no way they pull this off, because it's almost like a Lakers right now situation. You know how they build these super teams with, like, and if you get the wrong formula, bro, things go horribly wrong very quickly. We've seen it.
The Lakers are idiots. They just tried this like 7 years ago with Steve Nash and Dwight Howard.
I don't know why they're trying it again.
They plastered them all over the ESPN magazines and the Sports Illustrated and all that shit, and we're like, Lake Show is back.
Look
this
at the old guys
to do it,
getting the old gang together from the 2014 All-Stars.
You can't
yeah.
put Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony on the same team as LeBron James and Anthony Davis and expect that to work. Sorry.
Is Dwight Howard still there? No, I think he's gone. Is he back? I think he went to Philly. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Not a basketball podcast, but what did that have to do with what we were talking about? Oh, I saw the cast and I was like, I just feel like they could easily fuck this up.
Right,
and
right,
so
right.
to see them get the perfect mix and obviously so much credit back to Denis Villeneuve, who's like, look, here's what he's got going for him now. Sicario.
Right now. Yeah.
Sicario, Arrival, Dune. I'm assuming they're letting him do the rest of the series.
He's definitely doing part two.
Okay. Yeah, he has pre-production on part two right now. And he's working on this some TV series, Dune, the Sisterhood.
That's
Is that what
ben
you're talking
Jezra
about?
One. Yep.
He's got Cleopatra's been announced, but he also did Prisoners, which was incredible.
It's a highly underrated, or it's a. I guess it has cult classic status, is what I would say.
I think
say.
So. I saw it in theaters and
people
was like, God,
that movie.
Damn! But like, it wasn't really one you could be like, you got to go see this because it was so fucked up. You're just by the end of it, you're just like, I'm tired and I want to go to bed.
Is that Hugh Jackman?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think it was. And anyway, so he is, like you said, rapidly ascended. Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal,
that's right.
who's currently being roasted by the entire world
that's
because
correct.
Taylor Swift re-released a 10-year-old album.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate to me. for him, I feel like it's got to be...
all press is good press, baby.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong there. Yeah, I'm sure he's raising his race a little bit.
People are talking about him around the water cooler. This Funke guy is all I hear about.
He's playing good tweet, bad tweet. yeah,
Yeah, he's hot right now. Paul Dano is another one of the people in
Prisoners. Yeah,
Prisoners has a great cast too. Yeah. Out of Prisoners, back to Villanueva. That's the point. He pulled this off, and we should all be thankful for that, because it could have easily been one of these situations where they tried to pull too much of the lore from the stuff into it and then made it all complicated and weird. And what I mean by that is overly nerdy.
Yeah.
And that makes it unenjoyable for most.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. I just, you could have had, like, I'm now interested, though, because they didn't give me all the backstory about the families and the emperor and what that all even means.
I know.
To go do, like, the side research, which is another
piece
of this.
It's a fun part of the franchise.
It is. I had a question to ask you. First time you watched this movie,
mm-hmm.
did it register with you early? Like, did you log it? Did you note it that Rebecca Ferguson's character was not Oscar Isaac's wife?
No.
She was, somebody calls her a concubine, even.
Right. The impression I get through three watches, a couple of which half in and out, is that she was sort of placed there almost. Like, it was almost an arranged marriage situation, but maybe he didn't know that side of it, like, based on this whole, what is
and
it called?
And they weren't married. I think the Ben Jezreel, hopefully I'm saying
But they
that
were not
correctly.
Married, right.
Right.
So, like, that was, I guess my first read was that they were married. My second read was, oh, okay, so maybe it's like some kind of arranged marriage thing that I'm missing.
And they are, you know, one of the wrinkles, I think, to this, like, prince that was promised, messiah figure story.
Right.
Is that they're not just waiting for this person to come. He's Ben Jezreel is, like, actively, like, biologically trying to engineer him through mating, essentially.
Right.
Right? So that's an... You know, and Oscar Isaac's character has a line where he's like, I should have married you.
Right.
Okay, so that's it. I sort of clocked that, but I didn't, like, register it as something important. So then I also think I kind of missed this in my first watch. Did you clock any, like, Oedipal sexual tension between Paul and his mother?
No,
when they're, like, out in the dune, changing into the sand suits, and they're, like, kind of, like, do these little furtive glances at each other as they're getting changed.
I think there is supposed to be some kind of weird element to their relationship,
yeah,
and based on the magical shit and what and something about the way she's observing him,
yeah,
and trying to see where he's at in his growth stage, that gives off this a little bit of that Oedipus vibe where it's just like, wait.
Does she want to bang him?
But I think that's also just because she's would obviously be like a super hot mom.
Uh-huh.
Which just makes it weird because it's Timothée Chalamet and he's a beautiful man. So it's just two very attractive people on screen.
Yeah. Well, so
I don't know though. Definitely weird vibes.
I picked up on the little awkward moment when they're changing into the suits. I didn't register it as like, wait, are we doing even, you know, did this book also set off the whole, you know, incest is hot thing?
Yeah.
But I apparently there is supposed to be some of those undertones.
Okay.
So just something to look out for. As we all know, incest is very hot right now.
Wow. but yeah, so there was a lot of confusion around, like, the family setup for me the first time through, where I was like, that was definitely one of the details I didn't pick up till my second or third watch, where first time through I was like, okay, so yeah, they got together and made this prince kid, or whatever, and just sort of went on to the other shit. But yes, that is a pretty integral part of the story.
I believe so.
That we will get more of moving forward, probably. I think there's going to be a lot of flashbacky type shit.
Okay.
Is the impression I get? Because we're going to need backstory for a lot of what they presented in this first movie, right? But also the moving forward stuff with Zendaya.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't need.
But I'm very stoked for it. My last question here for you, we almost got there and then we switched to another topic, but we were talking about all of the lovely looking gentlemen in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Did your significant other have any comment on which ones were zaddy?
No, I just assume all of them. But we don't really speak during movies, though.
Do you speak after the movies?
Yes. Sometimes, but sometimes...
Okay,
but,
now bed.
Sleep now. No speak. No, man, I don't recall her specifically mentioning anybody.
I ask because, like, Oscar Isaac, I think, is, like, 40 years old now.
Yeah, okay.
42, maybe even somewhere in that range, we obviously know that Timothy Chalamet is like a young heartthrob. You know, the Gen Zers are like,
he's a sex symbol though at this point. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. But there is a line, and I don't know whether it's 27, 28, 29. It might creep all the way up to 30. I'd be interested to hear. But like there's a moment where Timothy Chalamet is not who you're attracted to, and it is all 100% Oscar Isaac. And it's like there's a dividing line, and I think it basically separates Gen Zs from millennials. But I just like funny anecdote is that Graybeard 42-year-old was like, that's who was steaming it up for my lady friend, not Timothy Chalamet at all, who is the heartthrob lead of this movie.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
So but he's also like, I will say this, he's filling what is a very George Clooney archetype.
Totally.
So yep. It's not like Clooney was hot to chicks when we were in high school, dude.
That's right.
And Clooney is hot to chicks now, and he's like this age, like he was like this silver fox freak.
Yep.
Who was just attractive to all women, period.
Right.
And he won Sexiest Man Alive like Paul Rudd just did, like 52 consecutive years, yeah. And he still hasn't aged.
Well, cue up Oscar Isaac, because I think Oscar Isaac's going to win it.
You're not wrong. He's right in that lane, too, where he's like, I mean, but he's a better actor, frankly, probably, than Clooney. In terms of the seriousness of the roles he's achieved so far,
I would say so, yes.
At least his roster, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, the Ocean's movies are fun as shit.
Yeah.
Three Kings is really fun, too.
Michael Clayton's great.
Michael Clayton is phenomenal, but, okay, now that I've talked it out loud, but that's his whole fucking career. This guy just started, bro. And he's already built a roster, a resume where I'm like, God damn.
Yeah, Clooney is great in a lot of roles. Out of Sight is another one. But he's Oscar Isaac has more range, I would say.
Well, and Clooney is an international icon on a different level in that old school movie star way that longer exists that we've talked about, where Oscar Isaac is not really going to be able to achieve that level of stardom, I don't think. I don't think it's possible anymore to be one of those guys. Social media is too much. The Gen Z kids can't connect with you if you don't do social. They don't know who the fuck Leonardo DiCaprio is until they watch one of his movies.
Yeah. Or until he dates one of them.
This is a good, this is a good franchise for another reason, and it covers all ages. You get characters that are like kids, like Zendaya and Timothée. And then you've got like Oscar Isaac, the Silver Fox, and fucking Jason Momoa, and then Old Man Skarsgård.
Yeah.
And Josh Brolin and Javier Bardem. And it's just they're all over. And then they've got the, they've got Charlotte Rampling in there, just thrown in. She's the head Bene Gesserit lady who's doing all of the...
That won't let Timmy pull his hand out of the box?
Yeah, they won't let Timmy pull his hand out of the box.
That old bitch.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And and she's also, by the way, that was incredibly... Like, the scene where she's like, curtain of silence, and then it's her and the Baron and all the treachery. Like, who are these Bene Gesserit?
We don't even know, man.
You know what? Let's go read us a book, Barrett. Yeah. I'm probably not going to read the book. I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, I'm just going to deep dive.
Yeah, deep dive on the wikis.
Something like that.
The wiki pages.
I bet there's a Dune wiki. Dune.wiki.
Sure there is. Okay, so it was great. We loved it.
We
loved it. We'll be back next week to talk about more TV and films, such as Succession and others. And Curb,
yes.
Which my girlfriend is currently working her way through for the first time, and Barrett's currently working his way through the newest season, and I'm going to try to get caught up on the newest season by next week's show, because I have a lot of free time this weekend, finally. So,
excellent stuff.
Stoked to talk about Curb, stay caught up on Succession, we'll see what else we can get in there, but thank you all for riding with us and listening, we appreciate you. Support our sponsor, go to manscaped.com, use that code OCC20 to support the show, so that we can continue to do our thing. That's how this whole operation works. Also, support us directly on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, and watch The Sopranos with Barrett and I. We are currently on season 4, of creating a companion podcast for every single episode of The Sopranos that is friendly to both first-timers and repeat watchers. I am the repeat watcher, Barrett is the first-timer, and it has been a blast so far. If you want to enjoy The Sopranos, a lot of people are watching it, go to patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, and do so today. Support the show at the same time. Be back soon. Thank y'all. Appreciate you. Until our next helping, goodbye, friends.